This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Losers, in other words.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Welcome back, and welcome back to Tops on McKinley. Your chance to win the ultimate Bills road trip. Find the code word here at Tops or any Buffalo area or Rochester area Tops location and enter to see the Bills visit Pittsburgh December 15th. Get the code word here. Go to WGR550.com to enter. I'm Mike Shope. Bulldog is off today and tomorrow. He'll be back with me from the stadium on Sunday for Bills Bengals. Sal Capaccio is here with me today. And for more on the Bills' Week 3 opponent, Cincinnati, we are very pleased to welcome on the Western Hotline, Joe Goodberry with Locked On Bengals. Joe's been on the show before. I believe, Joe, you're from the Falls. I don't want to have to ask you that every time. I should just have this down. But I think you're in the area, right?
That's right. Yeah, all right. From Western New York. I'm from the Falls.
All right, cool. At Joe Goodberry on Twitter, we're very glad to have you. Cincinnati start after Week 1, what I saw and heard, I was excited and impressed about the Bengals. And tell us, Joe, if that seemed reasonable and then if that really would have changed after Week 2.
Yeah, we all were excited. I mean, they went toe-to-toe in Seattle, which I think was the most impressive part. You know, you expect to go in there with a bad offensive line and have maybe 10 false starts in a game, and they didn't have any issues really with the O-line besides running the ball, which has been a perpetual issue for them. But no false starts, pass protection held up. Andy Dalton threw 54 times, 400 yards. John Ross, who's been, I guess, a bust for the first 2 years, exploded on the scene. Everyone was excited. Plus, the defense, for the first time, came out in a 3-4 look. And really, I think, surprised Seattle a little bit and were able to clamp down on them for the most of the game, besides one big play to Tyler Lockett. So everyone's like, okay, is this the Bengals? Because they've got talent to beat you if the coaching staff's going to open things up the way they did on defense and offense. Maybe they can compete this year. And then you go into Week 2, and the 49ers just dismantled them completely. I mean, that's as bad as it could possibly look, defensively and offensively. It's just they couldn't do anything. 10 points until a garbage-time touchdown at the end, a 66-yard touchdown by John Ross again. But, we come away from that and step back and go, maybe they're bad. History says if you go start off 0-2, not only do you have a 10% chance of even making the playoffs, you've got – like an 85% chance of ending up with double-digit losses. So we're looking at best, maybe 6-10 now.
And what exactly happened in that San Francisco game? It looked like they just got pounded on in the run game. Why did that happen?
Yeah, the linebackers for the Bengals have been an issue for a long time. It's right now Preston Brown and Nick Vigil are their two main linebackers. They're really not playing with a third guy. Like I said, they went to more of a 3-4 defense. So those outside linebackers are really edge defenders, defensive ends, if you will. So they're not the most athletic group. You guys know Preston Brown. And 49ers came out with a lot of misdirection, a lot of play action, a lot of jet sweep motions, and it just confused them. They just could not run sideline to sideline. Too often they're looking in the backfield. They figure out who's got the ball. You see the linebackers go to the left to flow with the play, and the linemen are in the second level already, walling them off, and they're just free running lanes. Surprisingly, the 49ers got some fast running backs. I didn't know who any of those guys are. Matt Breida and Raheem Mostert, fine. I mean, if you'd have picked them up and played them in fantasy, you had a great day. But, you know, it turns out those guys are pretty fast. And Marquise Goodwin, we know who he is. He's a sprinter. He's fast, gets wide open. But they schemed these guys open, and the Bengals just had no answer at all. I'm really concerned with the horizontal stuff. For the teams that are coming up on the schedule, it looks like that's not going to quit. It just might be the way the NFL teams are today. And if the Bengals don't respond on defense, they're going to have a long season.
We're talking with Joe Goodberry about the Bengals, who, of course, the Bills meet on Sunday. Mike Shope with Sal Capaccio. Joe, how do you see, or did you see, the Bengals' expectations for this year with a new coach? You've got things maybe pointing you in either direction about that. The coach might awaken fans and the organization and maybe open your mind to like a bigger year? Certainly, I think there are things still on that offense to be really excited about, and maybe there's a breath of fresh air with that. But also, you know, the expectations, like the win total wasn't very high, and like not many people were talking up Cincinnati's chances. So what do you think they want from this year?
Yeah, so long with Marvin Lewis. You know, 16 years, he never really had a terrible year. I mean, I think 6 wins was the lowest he ever accomplished in Cincinnati in that time frame. So whenever you see the projections, they were never lower than that. And then 3 straight losing seasons with Marvin, it was time to move on. It was probably time 5 years ago. But point being, they get Zach Taylor in. And, yeah, everyone's excited because he's young, he's offensive. Everything you'd like to hear for a coach that your team's finally going out on a limb and bringing someone else in. And everything he said, everything he's done has brought some energy and brought excitement. But everyone was still really at guard with this, because you look at first-time head coaches, and it's a crapshoot, especially when you're a franchise like the Bengals, that you're not throwing a lot of money out there. You're not bringing in a big-name guy. You guys probably have dealt with this in Buffalo when it's a new coach every 3 years or so, but you never know. Is it Rex Ryan because he's a big name? That can be just as big of a bust as a Sean McDermott, who you had no idea who he was until your team starts looking at him. So you really don't know from the outside. You hope that everything's going to work out, but you know, after week one, everyone's like, yeah, let's do it. And then you kind of realize, you look at history and you kind of come back down to earth and you say, yeah, first-time head coaches typically don't do very well, especially that first half of the season. It's usually they start gearing up towards the end. But like Sal said, there are some pieces on this offense to be excited about. I mean, Joe Mixon led the AFC in rushing last year. If you can't get the ground game going eventually with him, it's going to raise bigger questions with Zach Taylor and the legitimacy of this offense, because he said he's going to bring this Rams offense. That's why he was hired, really. And Todd Gurley was always put in position with the Rams under McVay to where he can carry this team at any time. They got the best out of Jared Goff. I think if he's not able to get the best out of Andy Dalton and get the best out of Joe Mixon, things are going to turn pretty quickly against Zach Taylor.
Sal, what do you like more for Mixon coming up here? Because this is what everybody's doing. Ask for the trade or hold out, which is like the better play for him. You know, he's had big numbers. This year's not going well. Maybe without a good game against the Bills. Would you make a power play if you were Mixon?
No, I don't think I would. I'm actually caught between here. Excuse me. I know Mike likes to talk a lot of fantasy. I don't love to do it in these types of areas, but I'll say it. I have Mixon and John Ross both on my fantasy teams, both of them actually. And I'm going back and forth and if I should play one or the other. And I think the question for me lies in how sustainable is John Ross, Joe? I mean, what he did in game one, as you said, maybe he's unlocked him. I don't know here, but how sustainable is what has happened here the first 2 weeks with John Ross?
It's hard to say, right? It's hard to forget the first 2 years where he didn't catch a pass his rookie year, dealt with injuries his first year, dealt with injuries his second year. He's dealt with injuries his whole college and NFL career. So at any point, longevity-wise, it could just come crashing down in terms of injuries. But even last year, he had 7 touchdowns, and they just couldn't unlock him completely. He averaged 10 yards per catch last year. He just didn't seem like he had that last gear. He dealt with it throughout through mini camps, through preseason, and then early in the season, where it just seemed like he couldn't get up to speed. And for him, that's, you know, fast. And then this year, it's completely different. You can see, and when he gears down and gets up to speed and accelerates, defenders are backing out of there, man. They are scared of his speed. It's threatening, and any given play. I mean, he scored from 55, 35, and 66 so far just by touching the ball and being a freak, and that is sustainable. You can score on any given play. That's worth playing, but at the same time, I think as the season goes on, if A.J. Green does get back and gets healthy, you got to think the chances are going to be there less often. He's averaging on 10 targets a game, John Ross is. You got to think if Green gets back and is that number one guy we've known him to be, maybe Ross drops down to 6 or 7 targets, but still, that could still be a touchdown with that low amount of targets. As for Joe Mixon, though, I would buy low on him if you could, because I do think this is going to be a great fit for him eventually. He had 1 preseason carry. He looks extremely rusty out there. I just did a film review for The Athletic where I looked at all the running plays, and I had 10 of them where just one guy made an error and the running game falters. You know that. It takes all 5 yep. linemen to really do it. But I had 4 of them down for Joe Mixon as fault. And whether it was a bad read, a slow read, or an over-exaggeration on his cuts or course corrections through the hole, and it allowed a defender or the unblocked defender to get a little too close to him and bring him down. He's only made 1 guy miss so far this year on 22 touches. I think that's going to change. It's going to come back, and I think the better games are, obviously, I hope so, are ahead of them throughout the rest of the year.
I'm going to want to get back to the receivers, I think, especially Green. But, you know, Mixon will make guys miss. You just can't have it be all year in the backfield, right? Like they've had line injuries, and how much better will that get?
Yeah, that's been a big theme this week, right? I mean, there's got lots of guys that are banged up on the offensive line who they may be down a couple of starters up front against the Bills.
Yeah, that's the tough part. But one of the starters is a fourth-round rookie in Michael Jordan at left guard. Actually replacing him is last year's first-round pick, Billy Price. There's a chance they actually get better at left guard this week. And Price wasn't starting because Trey Hopkins last year, who played for Price when he missed about four games, played really good at center. And then they came into this camp and this offseason, new O-line coach, new coach, everything. So they said, okay, it's a fair competition. Billy Price ended up dealing with plantar fascia in his foot and was out. And Hopkins just won the starting center job, and he's been really good. So Price just kind of fell to the wayside, and they said, okay, we'll give you some guard snaps, and you know, at the next opportunity, maybe you can compete for one. Well, 2 weeks in, the opportunity arises. He's going to get to play at left guard. There's a chance they get better there. The big thing, though, is Cordy Glenn at left tackle. As you guys know, you just cannot count on him. You just don't know when he's going to be out there. When he plays, he's decent. But that's for half the games a year. So Andre Smith's out there right now, and he's been not good for a long time, but it's the Bengals, so they keep bringing him back because that's what they do anyways. John Miller's right guard, actually coming off of probably a career game for him last week. He was actually really good, maybe the only guy who had a good game throughout on the offensive line and a bad day trying to run the ball against a good 49ers front. I mean, they played the 2-0 Seahawks. They played the 2-0 49ers. Now they're going to the 2-0 Bills. They've had a tough stretch in front of them with good defensive lines. Seattle getting Jadeveon Clowney, he was a handful. 49ers got five first-round picks in their front. And then Buffalo, who just spent a first-round pick, but has looks like Shaq Lawson after week one was making some plays. And Jerry Hughes. So they've got some guys there that are going to probably make it hard for the Bengals on the front. Last year was a battle line, too, and Joe Mixon still led the AFC in rushing. He is a talent. And I think eventually talent wins at the end of the day.
Yeah, all right. I can buy that. I hate to be dumb here, but Michael Jordan playing guard is kind of cool and funny, right? Like, he was a guard. Like, he decides to go into football. Right. You think he needs to be a guard? Like, you know, your body type's going to determine that for you, but still, it's kind of cool that he's a guard, right, Sal?
Yeah, no doubt.
Not even like a tackle.
No, that's right. And not a defensive end, right? That's Michael Johnson, by the way. But you're right. It's the exact same position. It would be funny if he wore 23. Obviously, he can't in the NFL. I do want to ask you about A.J. Green and kind of his future in Cincinnati. This injury, so short-term and long-term, you know, kind of put it in perspective for us, Joe. Here's a guy that, you know, coming out now, he's been in the league, 8 years now? I mean, he's not a young guy anymore, but still putting up numbers. Just kind of talk short-term and long-term about A.J. Green.
He's still good as last time we've seen him. The only time he's not been good is when he's been out with injury, and that's happened two out of the last 3 years, and then this year now, missing at least the first three games. I think on pace to be either week four or week five to return. But the Bengals have invested in the wide receiver position. Tyler Boyd a couple years ago in the second round, John Ross a couple years ago in the first round, ninth overall pick. So they have put in, you know, replacements if they lose A.J. Green and for the long haul. And I do think they would have extended him, or at least they were talking with him right before camp. He hurt himself day one within 10 minutes of camp. That's usually when they get their extensions done, and they just kind of pulled everything back when that happened because it's kind of starting to be a trend now with him not being able to stay healthy, and you don't want to throw a third contract is rare for a receiver. I mean, you got Larry Fitzgerald and Julio Jones, that's it. But those guys are, you know, franchise cornerstone guys and still have been productive. Fitz is still out there playing. But and I expect Julio to still play well. I think Green will still play well into his 30s. But when Ross plays the way he is now through two games, Tyler Boyd is still maybe one of the better slot guys in the league. I mean, just had 10 catches for 120 yards last week, would have had a touchdown. One was called back on a holding. But they feel good with Ross and Boyd. Now, I mean, Ross is a bit of a wild card because of his health, as I said. But if he's playing the way he is, and Boyd's playing, and who was just extended this offseason, it's kind of hard to foresee them throwing 15, 18, 20 million at A.J. Green if he commands that, if he commands what Julio gets. I kind of find it hard to believe they'll do it. I do think they'll consider if someone comes calling right before the trade deadline, because what are you risking? You might get a third, fourth round comp pick if you go through the year and then let him walk. I do think they want him. I do think he wants to be there. And I do think if we're coming up on the time where they're going to draft a quarterback, and I'd love for this team to draft a quarterback when you have Green, Ross, and Boyd playing the way they are, and you insert the quarterback into that. I mean, that's ideal situation, right?
Right. I like that thinking. Hey, Joe, so you know, I this might be annoying. The game in Baltimore 2 years ago to end the season, right, where Cincinnati pulled it out, and the Bills have not played the Bengals since then. They did not play last year. Just want to – maybe you'll talk about, like, what, if anything, is that game to the Bengals or to Bengals fans, you know? Like, the Bengals, no playoff success, but several appearances in the Dalton years, so it's not like they never go. For the Bills, it was we never go. And that play happened, and you know what happened, too, with Dalton and even Boyd with charity efforts and such. So, like, yeah, when you think about that, maybe you never do, but when you think about that, it's just funny that would mean so much to a third fan base like it did, and maybe almost nothing to the team that won.
Well, it did mean something to, I think, Bengals fan base and maybe the franchise too. That was Tyler Boyd's breakout game. And before that, he was inactive just 2 weeks before that. And for him to have that performance and that last play, I mean, he came in the next year and he had a fantastic year last year. But I also, people say it, that may have been Andy Dalton's clutch moment, and it happened in a game that meant nothing to them, because of course it did, right? But it meant something for the Bills and to get them in, and for him, I mean, everyone thought, you're watching that game, you're like, geez, fourth and, what was it, 13 or whatever, well, it's fourth and 23, I can't remember at this point, but you go, it's over, that's it, the Bengals don't do this, Andy Dalton doesn't do this, he doesn't convert here, I don't even like him converting on third and seven. So, and then this play happens, Boyd takes it in, and run after the catch, all that scores. It was, I mean, Bengals fans were celebrating as if they won something. I mean, they eliminated the Ravens, the division rival, while propelling the Bills. And the way the Bills reacted and the fan base reacted only made it more special. People do talk about it because it was a big moment for – I mean, obviously not as big as Buffalo, but it made you think maybe they can do it in the clutch, even though it meant nothing.
I thank you for that. There was also a win at Baltimore, and you wouldn't like Baltimore. So it was right. Baltimore – you kept them out of the playoffs. The Bengals did with that play. That might be my – favorite thing about it, if I were a Cincy fan, was like, you know, if the Bills beat the Jets in the game here maybe the year before or 2 years before to keep them out.
Right.
And that would feel good. So
I have to ask you, I think I probably have, Joe, but since you grew up and you are from the Falls, how did you gravitate to the Bengals?
I don't know, to be honest. I think it was the helmet when I was a kid. I'm very impressionable. Even my son right now, someone gave him a Panthers hat, and he's 9, but someone gave him a Panthers hat like 4 years ago, so now he's a Panthers fan. And I'm like, this is sports, isn't it? It's so stupid. And then you're stuck with them forever, no matter if they're the worst franchise in the league or not.
Well, my sister's a Bengals fan, or at least she was. My mom's from Southern Ohio, so Reds and Bengals, and the Tiger Stripes were a big win.
I mean, my son is on the T-ball Orioles, so he always wants to know if the Orioles won or lost, even though I think I'm good now. I think I got him to be a Yankees fan.
He knows they lost. But yeah. He doesn't have to ask.
he knows
they lost.
But I do, part of the reason I bring it up is, you know, can we now say long-suffering Bengals fans? Because it's not just, you know, the recent run of, you know, kind of being in mediocrity, but they are the team with the longest current, you know, playoff win drought, and the Bills are number 3 on that list. The Bengals, 28 years since their last playoff win. The Bills, 25 years since their last playoff win, or 23 years, excuse me.
1990 over Houston with Cincinnati.
And the Bills was 1995.
Right.
But, man, these are the two teams playing this weekend. The Lions are actually the one in there with them, I should say.
91.
They have gone a very long time without winning in the playoffs, Joe, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, can we just combine these teams? I mean, they've tried to in the last 2 years, right? Picking up each other's players and trading with each other. They've kind of become best friends. Ever since they've both voted against the CBA all those years ago, they've been like, all right, we can talk to each other. But
that's funny.
You know, you look at it and say, if Buffalo goes 3-0, which they should, if they beat the Bengals, handle their business, I think everyone looking at the schedule before the year would have said, all right, that's a win, or at least a game you should win if you think you're a 10-win team. If they do, Buffalo's got a great chance to actually go to the playoffs again and make something happen. So, you know, from Bengals' perspective, we hate the Browns, and they're like one of the longest also in there, but the Bills are not a team I think the Bengals or Bengals fans ever root against. It's weird. It's a weird relationship, especially recently with so many players swapping between each other. And, you know, for the Bills to take on, like, Russell Bodine, who was the everyone was like, oh, my God, get him out of here, right, for the last 4 years. And then the Bills take him, and he's terrible for the Bills, and they trade him and get a sixth-round pick. That's the only time I think Bengals fans are like, man, you know, that's it. We're not talking to the Bills anymore. They're getting value for garbage now.
Are you old enough to remember the 88 game?
No, I was born in 87.
Okay.
So I used to always watch NFL films and stuff as a kid, so I remember it, of course.
Yep. The 88 AFC Championship, you're old enough, Sal.
Oh, yeah, I totally remember it.
The Bengals, I mean, that was fierce. That's what happens. And then 89, they came here. And that was, like, I was supercharged for that game as a Bills fan. When the Bengals came here in 89, I had a low seat in the stadium for that. Mm-hmm. And on that day, like, it was super serious to me, beating Cincinnati, getting them back. And the Bills did win that game, something like 24-7. Some score like that at the stadium, and that was intense.
And then they played Monday night a couple years later here in Buffalo.
Yep, and I was there with my mom and my sister in the end zone for that, because they were there. She was there to root for Cincinnati in the end zone as a 15-year-old girl or whatever.
I think Mike would remember this, but Joe, a little trip down memory lane. The difference between which team actually went to the Super Bowl in '88 probably hinged on, believe it or not, Chip Lowmiller of the Washington Redskins missed a kick. At the end of the regular season, I think it was against the Bengals. And if he made that kick, the Bills would have had home field in the AFC title game.
Yep, that's right.
Amazing. And, you know, I do think those games and those kind of late 80s rivalries are what also did help me become a fan, because I kind of always went the opposite of whatever my, like, brother picked and things like that. And so I don't, you know, I was a baby then, but my dad, the way he talked about the Bengals, and, oh, they stole the K-gun and this and that with Boomer, you know, tall tales grow as you by your dad as he's drunk watching the game. But you know, so you know, as you're 5 and 6, you're like, yeah, I think I'll take the Bengals. That sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, or the Bills didn't need, like, Washington blew that game on a Saturday. The Jamie Morris 40 some rushes for Washington in that loss, and then the Bills, well, still they'll just beat Indianapolis the next day, still get home field, and they didn't. They were a big favorite,
right?
Week 16
might have changed things, but you don't know.
They would have been home field had they beaten the Colts and lost.
They have a good history, these two teams, though. There's for sure about that,
and it's there.
And I think it's, you know, it's all kind of come full circle with what Mike brought up earlier with Andy Dalton and Tyler Boyd and you know what happened 2 years ago. So I think it's been a good but not a really hostile rivalry over the last 30 years, if you will.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, just give us a good player next time. No more Preston Browns and Cordy Glenns, right?
We'll see what we can do. Joe Goodberry, Locked On Bengals. Joe, thanks a lot. We'll hopefully talk again soon.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
When Kyle come down, I don't know if he just, it's a confident thing with him or what. He just, you know, when I see Kyle, it's like he did what he did in this league for so long and he knows so much. So if he could do it, why can't I do it? Yeah. And looking at him, I know I'm a little bit better athlete than Kyle. But I think he have it here. That's more than anything I could ever do, any 40 I could ever run, any quick twitch I could ever have. It's here with him, and that part of the game is what's going to take me to the next level.
Ed Oliver on One Bills Live today. Mike Schoep with Sal Capaccio at Tops. Your chance to win the ultimate Buffalo Bills road trip is by visiting Buffalo or Rochester area Tops locations to get the code word. And then enter that at WGR550.com for a chance to win 2 game tickets and more to the Bills game in Pittsburgh, December 15th. Round trip coach transportation, food and beverage, and Labatt Bills gear as well. How many times have you been there?
Where's that
game? Pittsburgh.
Never. This year will be the first.
Is that right?
Been there for a baseball game.
Did you ever play? Did you ever get to Three Rivers?
Nope.
No, really?
Never.
I went to a Monday night game, a Bills Monday night game there. And, like, they had 3 or 4, and they were all the same game. 23-7, 24-6, Carnell Lake intercepted Jim Kelly.
Rod Woodson.
Rod Woodson. It was like they were all the same
Kelly
game.
Kelly got the –
Nothing.
Just
nothing.
Almost beheaded a few times.
Nothing
like,
ever
oh
went
gosh.
Well. And one of those games, one of those years I went to, I went through, I got a media pass for that game. So like the only road game I think I ever did that for was Monday Night Football in Pittsburgh. And the two things I remember, nothing about the game is memorable, except they were all kind of these awful results for the Bills. It's seeing Michaels, Gifford, and Dierdorf in their yellow jackets, I think, walking into the press box together. Like I was out in the concourse or something at Three Rivers Stadium, and these three guys walked just like they would, just like they would have walked if they were shooting it for a promo. Like one right in lockstep.
Yep.
Maybe there were cameras somewhere that I didn't see, but they were just like right together walking into the press box together. And the other thing was, look at all this food. Pittsburgh. It was just like unbelievable. I mean, I had never even conceived of a press spread like this.
Right.
And like, I went from feeling like the Bills were super cool because they gave out sandwiches to holy, this is out there. It was like just a new world going to Three River Stadium for the press spread. Two things I remember. That was it.
So the last 2 weeks we've been at MetLife. And everything's the same, obviously, except for the green and the blue. But
yes.
Everything is the same. I mean, the away radio booth is the same. You know, the press box in the same spot, all that stuff. It's the same stadium. Where the media eats is also the same. But what I noticed was different, and I have no idea if this is normally the case, Mike, or not, but when they gave breakfast out to the media, they have – it's a very nice spread, by the way. Not every stadium does this. Not every press box does this. They had eggs and bacon and potatoes, and they had sandwiches. If you want. It was great. But the difference was the first week, that was all they had. The second week, there was a chef making omelets before the Giants game.
The Giants.
And I'm wondering
–
that a Giants thing? It's got to be. Why was that guy not there making omelets the first week when the Jets were playing at home?
Well – I'm only guessing at all of this.
Okay.
But I feel like you're going to agree with me. You were just there. And what you're talking about sort of agrees with my sensibilities about this or my understanding of this. So when it was Giants Stadium, you would think, like, wouldn't the Giants just have to do a little bit more than the Jets? Whatever that would mean. However that mm-hmm. whatever that would constitute.
Something.
Whether that's press food or some other. Like, wouldn't it have to be.
Right.
If you were the Giants, you know, the Jets are now sharing your house.
But you still have to let everyone know it's your house.
You have to, right.
Uh-huh.
You have to measure what they're doing and then maybe do a little bit more just in situations like this. You want everybody to think the Giants games are a better experience. Now, I don't know if this is the same dynamic as that. It's not named for them like it was. Maybe it's more of a 50-50 thing. Maybe I should know. I don't know.
It's just odd to me that there was no chef making omelets week one. There was a chef making omelets week two. For the Giants. Hey, maybe he was just off. Maybe he was on vacation. I have no idea.
Listen, if the Bills only had a chef making omelets and no other food, I would be so happy.
Yeah.
I don't even care what time of day it is. They never play at night. Like, it just, I would take the omelets over anything. Yes. Let's talk about Miami for a minute.
Okay.
How bad is it?
Well, they just claimed Taco Charlton off waivers, so maybe it makes it less bad. But in all seriousness, Mike, it is brutally bad. They very well could be 0-16, and I think that I don't think they care. The team, the organization, it doesn't seem like they care. Doesn't seem like the coach cares if they're 0-16. Obviously, it's by design that they're trying to be, I guess, bad. But this is even different than a normal kind of tank that we've seen. I think even more so than the Browns. I feel like they've stripped it down so far as to not even have any semblance of trying to be competitive on a weekly basis. Where I think if you go back to the Browns team a few years ago, they knew they were going to be bad, but they at least tried to keep enough players on the team that they wouldn't embarrass themselves every week. I don't think the Dolphins even care about that.
No, right. It's the next level.
It is.
It is the next level. It's what baseball had.
Now,
where it got to the Astros, and the Astros were like, "Why? What's the point of appearances? Why do we need appearances?" Really don't. The players are going to hate it, but that's the, you know, that's the same. Let's why pretend? The one thing these teams won't do is admit it. You know, they won't just say it.
Of course.
But they talk around it, and it's like obvious, you know. But, you know, right? I mean, didn't – maybe I'm thinking about you. When the Sabres were here, wasn't it like this would not happen in football? What? How do you look at that?
I
mean, it's 4 years later, and it's happening.
I've never believed it wouldn't happen in football. I mean, the Colts did it as well to get Andrew Luck, but I've always felt it would be harder to do in football. It's harder to do over a 16-game season with a 53-man roster of players who – it's to get to that level, to be, you know, a weekly type of deal in a game, I don't know. It's hard to explain. I think that it's harder to do in football. And I also do think that there's a different makeup of people who've been in football for a long time, who run organizations, who probably wouldn't want to go as far as the Miami Dolphins have gone.
Even it's more if offensive?
Even if they're willing to say, hey, we know we're going to be bad, like, it's okay, we have to accept that.
Can you see an NFL lottery?
I would love an NFL lottery.
Can you
I don't know if I can see one. I think I can after this year. I think the Dolphins could be the reason why
it happens. Too. Me too.
There are enough people calling them out now. There are enough people calling them. I don't know if you've seen Ryan Clark's comments.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've read or heard. And whether you agree or disagree, Ryan Clark essentially said, it's unethical and it's dangerous for the players who are out there. They work their whole life to be put out there, and this is a very physical game, and they're not protected because they don't have enough good people around them to protect them, and now they're putting bad stuff on film if they ever want to go to another team, and they won't have a chance because people will say, well, look, you stink. Well, no, I was just in this situation where I could never have a chance to thrive and be good, and Ryan Clark kind of went off on that. And here's where I think the Dolphins are making a mistake, and that may be known as the anti-tank guy or whatever on here. I get why they're doing it. I don't even – hey, if they want to do it, I understand. But I do think they're making a mistake in how they're doing it, which is they're trading players who I think actually could help them when they finally get out of what they're doing, and they're going to have to replace those players anyway with the picks they're picking up. Minka Fitzpatrick is under contract for two more years and a fifth-year option if they want. One of the pick they got for him – they'll probably be searching for a guy just like him.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they could have him as a fifth-year veteran helping to steer the ship, which I think is important in a situation like that.
Yeah, I think it's pretty severe. And that's right. And the odds aren't so great that they'll do better than him or Tunsil with those draft picks. They're not. They will be younger.
That's right,
yes. The guys will be younger, and there's something to be said for that. You know, Ryan Clark isn't wrong, but it isn't the ultimate point. It's still you're the employee. And I don't sympathize with them, but you know, what the franchise is going to do, I mean, I still end up at, yeah, I can understand why you're doing what you're doing. The thing that needs to change, and the lottery does not change this, is it doesn't change it well enough. Sports continues to incentivize losing.
Right.
And
that's the problem
that,
I have.
That was the Sabres' life, and that is the Dolphins' life, and it was the Astros and the Cubs and these baseball teams. I mean, you've got a bunch of baseball teams right now whose fans think they are not interested in competing, and it's damaging the sport.
Yes.
I mean, the teams are deciding on their own to do it, and they're saving money and making more money, and they don't need to win. And so who is going to look out for the overall? I mean, commissioners don't have the backbone. Commissioners don't, they work for the owners. So someone's job should be to oversee that and protect the fans and protect the games, and no one's there to do it. No one's interested. So, I mean, I don't know. The NFL going to a lottery. Sal, when did the NBA start a lottery? 35 years ago?
It was the Patrick Ewing one. It was 1985.
I mean, that's 35 years ago.
And
here we are with the NFL. The lottery doesn't fix it, but it's a step, and the NFL hasn't even taken the step.
And the NHL did it after Mario Lemieux draft.
Also 35 years ago.
Yeah.
Or right whenever that started.
Time.
I mean, it,
84, right?
I don't know if the lottery goes back that far. The lottery goes back about 15 to 20 years in hockey.
Well, thing is, Mike, like, by the way, in case people don't know, the Dolphins have announced they're starting Josh Rosen
right
at quarterback this weekend. You know, there are a lot of people who say, and it's not wrong, well, look at all those picks they're going to have. That's great. I like it. Like, any team would love to have those picks. But here's the thing. Anybody can trade away guys for picks. Anybody can do it. It does not take – you don't have to be smart to tear down a team. But you still have to draft players. Not every pick is going to hit. And generally, the hit rate on picks is probably not even much higher than makes it 50-50. I don't know. But
you don't have to be that smart to build the team either. I mean, they're still guessing at it. They're still throwing darts. And the Dolphins are just going to have more throws.
They're going to have more throws.
I would expect them to get good. I mean, when there's every – that goes both ways, you know?
I think chances are the players they could draft with those picks, the chances are they won't even be as good as a Fitzpatrick or a Tunsil.
Yeah, in those specific cases,
right?
I would be more inclined to agree.
But if they get Tua, I mean, of course, he changes a lot of the dynamic.
You can't trade bad players for firsts. You know,
that's right.
Those number ones are highly coveted.
Yep.
Very interesting situation there. John Clayton, we'll ask him about Miami and more coming up at the top of the hour. Mike Schoep with Sal Capaccio. This is WGR.
Hoping to come back and come back stronger. Come back stronger than I was. And because that first game, you know, I felt like I wasn't myself. I wasn't playing like myself. I felt, you know, a little more uncomfortable than I had been in the preseason and in training camp. So just looking to come back strong, come back, you know, knowing the offense just that much more and playing well.
Sam Darnold there. Mike Schoep with Sal Capaccio. Time is tight here. John Clayton coming up at the top of the hour. Here's a question. Spinning off of listening to Sam Darnold, Sal, who would you rather be right now? The Jets or the Giants? The two teams the Bills just beat. Who's in better shape going forward?
I think the Jets. I'm a believer in Darnold much more than I am Daniel Jones, and it's about the quarterback for me. I do not like Adam Gase, but I don't think he's going to be there long. He'll last through next year, and that's probably it.
So that would put Darnold on three coaches in 4 years.
Which isn't all that uncommon for young quarterbacks, but yeah, I mean, it could mess them up a little bit, but I still believe in Darnold more than Daniel Jones. And what I saw the Giants last week, I think they have more to do around their roster than the Jets do.
Yeah, Jet defense wasn't bad. It wasn't bad on Monday night either.
No, they have C.J. Mosley. He's out. They have Quinnen Williams. He was out. So I think the Jets have a better roster than the Giants. I'm not a Pat Shurmur fan by any stretch, but I just don't think Adam Gase has what it takes to be a head coach in today's NFL and how you deal with players and the media and be a CEO of a program. He is probably a good quarterbacks coach. He knows his X's and O's, but that's not what being a head coach is in the NFL today. A head coach has to be a CEO, the face of the organization, deal with a lot of issues, and I think he's ill-equipped to deal with those issues.
Not to mention Greg Williams.
Right.
That's just more embarrassment.
Makes it worse.
More embarrassment there. All right, John Clayton, we'll talk Bills-Bengals. Lots of NFL stories, the big injuries this week, Roethlisberger and Breeze, and the Dolphins a little bit. There's so much to talk about in the league right now. John Clayton, after sports, here on WGR.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.